Welcome to Brighteon Broadcast News for Monday, June 5th, 2023. Yeah, it is 23. Mike Adams here. Thank you for joining me. This is the audio-only edition, and I want to remind you, coming up Wednesday with video, we will release our results of the cesium removal testing for popular water filters. So why cesium? Because, of course, cesium-137 is the most dangerous radioisotope that you'll be exposed to in fallout after a nuclear war, nuclear terrorism, dirty bomb attacks, you know, nuclear events. And cesium-137 mimics potassium in terms of its physiological pathways, both in plants and animals. It gets into milk, and it gets into water, and it gets into all kinds, it gets into food. And the reason it gets into milk is because the cows are eating cesium as it falls on the grass and so on, and it gets in their milk. And this is why you can't live around Chernobyl for three centuries, by the way, because the half-life of cesium-137 is about 29 years, and it takes about 10 half-lives for it to be considered, you know, gone. Roughly about 10 half-lives, so about three centuries. Now, cesium-137 is not something that I personally want to handle in the laboratory, so we actually did this testing with a non-radioactive stable isotope of cesium. But it's the same element, just not radioactive, obviously, because that would be crazy. So those of you from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission listening to this, don't worry. We won't be handling radioactive cesium-137. But we did test the removal of positively charged cesium atoms, essentially, cations. And we tested a lot of popular water filters, a couple dozen, let's say, including some of the popular brands that you probably know, the gravity filters and so on. And we have the results. And we're going to be releasing that on Wednesday as part of Brighteon Broadcast News. And the results, to me, were quite surprising. There were about, I'm thinking there were only five or six that were good. The rest were not so good. But one of the water filters that was quite good was surprisingly inexpensive. And it's a brand that, frankly, I had never even heard of before. And I don't know what's in their filter media, but it takes out cesium, so that's fascinating. I'll share that with you. And then I also found that some water filters that are promoted or positioned as anti-radiation water filters actually did not do a good job in these tests. So, kind of shocking. Anyway, this is going to be very useful, of course, in the aftermath of a nuclear event, and you want to be able to filter water, and you want to filter out the, you know, the radioactive cesium-137. What are you going to use? Well, I will answer that for you on Wednesday, so stay tuned for that. And real quick, for those wondering how we tested it, we use mass spectrometry. So ICP-MS in this case, elemental analysis, our ISO-accredited laboratory. This is the same instrument that we use to test our food for lead and arsenic and cadmium, and mercury and whatever else, zinc, aluminum, everything. Even nutritive minerals as well. I said zinc and there's strontium and so on. So it's the same instrument. And we actually have two of these instruments in the lab, which is kind of cool. So we have a newer one and an older one. And you can test any element you want with these instruments, or nearly any element. It's pretty cool. We can test, you know, radioactive versions of uranium or plutonium, or we can test for the presence of those elements. Not that we would be handling those substances, obviously, but there's some of that stuff is floating around out there. It's in the food. It's in the seawater, by the way, because of all the nuclear testing that has taken place on our planet since the 1940s, right? Yeah. And guess who's been setting off a bunch of nuclear bombs over the decades? Well, the United States and China and Russia, now North Korea and so on. So all that radiation is still floating around. Well, I mean, not all of it. There are half-lives and it goes away eventually, but a lot of it is still floating around. So it's kind of freaky. Like when I test products and I can look at the semi-quant scan and I can see like after effects, echoes of nuclear weapons testing from the 1940s and 50s. That's kind of freaky. Just tells you how much humanity is trying to destroy this planet, doesn't it? Yeah, I see it on the screen. I'm like, oh my gosh, how are we going to survive as a species? I don't even know. But here's something interesting. I spent a lot of time over the weekend really digging into cryptocurrency and decentralized finances because, you know, I've been studying hard and I've been doing a lot of deep dives into things like privacy-oriented cryptocurrency, you know, private transactions, just decentralization in general. And I'm going to say something here that you might find somewhat shocking, especially hearing it from me. But I'm going to say it. And it took me a number of years to come to this conclusion. I'll tell you what changed this in my mind. But here's what I'm going to say that's going to shock a lot of people, especially some of the gold and silver people. And I'm, by the way, I'm 100% still pro gold and pro silver. Don't get me wrong. Gold and silver will outlast everything. But here's what I need to say. I am now convinced, and I'll explain why, that Bitcoin is maybe now or on the way to becoming the global digital reserve currency. There, I said it. Which is, it's odd for me to say that because at one point I thought Bitcoin was going to go to zero. I didn't own Bitcoin for a long, long time. I have some now. But here's what I'm understanding. Yes, Bitcoin is, it's almost there, but it's going to become, I say, the global digital reserve currency. But, and the reason is because it's a globally accepted, borderless form of digital money. It's not perfect. It has issues, but it can't be messed with by any government or any central bank. And that makes it unique in the world. And now in the aftermath of all the FTX fallout, which burned out a whole lot of shady cryptos and schemes and whatever else, and also took down Bitcoin by about 2/3 or so, we are now in the post-scammy phase, for the most part, in terms of crypto maturity. And what I've noticed is that I've been listening to a lot of lectures, a lot of presentations by a lot of people, some of the smartest people in the crypto space. What I've noticed is that they have transitioned from where they used to be, which was trying to work with all the fiat banks. You know, 3 or 4 years ago, they were just trying to work with all the banks. They wanted institutional investors to invest in Bitcoin. That was the big push for some time. They have now transitioned from that to a new outlook that I'm seeing very strongly in the Bitcoin community and cryptocurrency in general, which is to not to work with the fiat currency system, but to replace the broken fiat currency system. And I'm also hearing from Bitcoiners and a lot of crypto people the critical point of evading censorship, or let's say how damaging censorship is in the world. And we didn't used to hear this, not as much from Bitcoiners. At least that's not my experience of watching this phenomenon all these years. But now I hear like top speakers, keynote speakers at conferences talking about how dangerous it is to have fiat currency centralized in the hands of governments and banks, and how censorship is evil, and how central banks are evil. And I'm watching this, I'm like, oh my gosh, like Ron Paul is back in the digital realm. This is, I mean, guys like me, we were all Ron Paul supporters, you know, before Bitcoin even existed, by the way. I remember giving Ron Paul a donation like 20 plus years ago when he was in Congress and just trying to get reelected. And now it's the Ron Paul revolution in the digital space. And Bitcoin quite literally represents the one global, like accepted everywhere cryptocurrency that no central bank can easily control. Now, I do understand that central banks can print their fake money and they can use their fiat currency to buy Bitcoin, you know, some amount of it. So they can play games with it. They can become whales, but they can't increase the supply of Bitcoin. That's the interesting thing. They can only create scarcity by buying up more, which would only make Bitcoin more valuable. So Even central banks are limited in how much damage they can do to a blockchain like Bitcoin. Yes, they can damage it, but they can't destroy it, and they can't artificially increase the supply. Now, the main drawback to Bitcoin, by the way, is lack of privacy, because Bitcoin is a public blockchain, right? Everything's fully transparent. All your wallet IDs are on the chain. And if you spend Bitcoin or send it to someone, then they know where it came from, and they can look up your wallet and see the whole history of your wallet from that wallet ID. And this is what had actually motivated me to look more strongly at privacy-oriented coins, such as Monero, for example. And, you know, all the different privacy coins solve this problem in a number of different ways. But one of the cool things that I found over the weekend, and you may have heard of this, but I hadn't, and it's really cool, and it adds a privacy method to holding Bitcoin. And I just want to share this with you. It's not sponsored or anything. These guys don't even know I'm talking about this. But it's called the Wasabi Wallet. Wasabi. You know, like the horseradish type spice. Wasabi. WasabiWallet.io. And if you go there and you download their wallet, it's a wallet that only holds Bitcoin. But it allows you to send and receive Bitcoin through multiple layers of privacy features. For example, it has a Tor layer, Tor, which is called the Onion Router, and uses a series of nodes in order to obfuscate the sending and receiving IPs of any kind of information, which could include website access and so on. But in this case, the Wasabi wallet uses a Tor network. The other thing it does is it allows you to just keep creating new kind of Bitcoin receive addresses that are one-time use addresses. You know how, have you ever been part of an online service like privacy.com where you can create all kinds of new credit card numbers? And then you go online and you can spend on a credit card number that you've dedicated to a certain thing because you don't want to be overcharged. Or let's say you want to become a member of some place like, I don't know, audible.com or whatever. And you don't want them to keep charging your membership forever because you forgot how to cancel and then make it impossible to cancel, right? So you go to privacy.com and you create all these alias credit card addresses. And I've used privacy.com. It's great. And then let's say you create one credit card number just for audible.com. And then if Audible keeps charging you without your permission, all you have to do is cancel that virtual credit card. You don't even have to try to contact customer service. You just disable the card and it's done. Let them try to track you down. You know what I mean? You just disable the dang card, right? So that's what privacy.com does. And that's in the world of fiat, by the way, just to be clear. Well, the Wasabi wallet, which is a very clever thing here, allows you to create essentially a Bitcoin receive and send alias addresses, even one-time use, so that you receive Bitcoin from somebody and that's it. Like that's the only time that address will ever be used. You'll never use it again. So it's never tied to any other transactions. No sends, no receives. And in doing this, it's a way to actually wrap privacy features around Bitcoin while still holding actual Bitcoin, which I found pretty cool. Because let's say you just want to hold Bitcoin because you know Bitcoin is, you know, the number one crypto. It's the most common. It's, like I said, it's probably going to be the world reserve digital currency. Not the failed US dollar, FedNow, you know, central bank digital currency, nonsense, mark of the beast system. No, no, I think it's going to be something. It's going to be Bitcoin, probably. Well, you can wrap this privacy around it using this wallet, this Wasabi wallet, and then you can kind of, you can hold on to that and nobody can really find it. Nobody knows where it is. And you can even do cold storage through the Wasabi wallet. And it uses a CoinJoin algorithm, which I'm not going to explain here, but it's a pretty cool algorithm. It batches hundreds of different transactions and obfuscates the inputs and outputs and so on. And essentially it means that all of the Bitcoin tracking companies can't track you or your money through the Wasabi wallet. So anyway, bottom line, if you hold Bitcoin and you want it to be private, check out Wasabi Wallet. Pretty cool thing. I think, you know, you'll find value in it. Now, if you hold privacy coins, then if they're proper privacy coins, then every coin is private, you know, all the time. And you don't need a special wraparound wallet. But the thing is, you're taking a different kind of price risk, right? Let's say you're holding Monero. Well, is Monero going to go up or down versus Bitcoin? Huh? Who knows? Who knows, right? A lot of these coins have gone down in the last, you know, 18 months or whatever. And of course, so has Bitcoin. But if you don't want to take that price risk and you just want to hold Bitcoin privately, then that's what the Wasabi wallet is all about. Now, the thing is, you know how I've been trying to build a tipping system on Brighteon.com to let people tip each other using, you know, cryptocurrency. And, you know, we are going to implement a tipping system using privacy-oriented coins, by the way. And I wish there were an easy way to allow people to tip each other in Bitcoin using some kind of privacy mode where they wouldn't mind having a, like, some kind of receive address posted all the time. But as far as I know, there isn't. There isn't any such thing for Bitcoin. This is why I prefer privacy coins for tipping systems and purchase systems and so on. And, you know, it's not the government's business what you're buying with your cryptocurrency. Whereas if we accept Bitcoin at our store and, you know, food rationing has kicked in, let's say, well, the government might come along and say, well, how dare you spend Bitcoin on food at the Health Ranger store, because that's not allowed. It violates your, you know, rationing quota. You're only allowed 1,500 calories a day. Have fun with that, you know, that kind of thing. Whereas if you're using privacy coins, then nobody knows. No government knows, nobody. Hence my preference for privacy coins, because privacy is a basic human right, is it not? It's about human dignity. The right to control your assets and to keep your assets hidden from prying eyes. And this is what the Bitcoin world is now truly understanding. It's obvious where humanity is going to have to choose a future between the surveillance Big Brother Orwellian control grid fiat currency Western banking system or decentralized finance, DeFi, in which Bitcoin becomes the global reserve digital currency and people use things like privacy coins or other coins, you know, different kinds of coins for different purposes. Some have faster transaction times. Some are better for micropayments. Some are better for large amounts. I mean, there's all kinds of different flavors out there. But the world is going to have to make a choice. Do you want to be free with decentralized finance, or do you want to be a slave to a financial control system that will leave you penniless and probably is trying to exterminate you with depopulation, by the way? And for the first time, I now see that the Bitcoin community at large gets this. They get this big time. This is no longer about just, you know, pumping some coin and trying to make money as it rises. I mean, that's the shallow level that a lot of YouTubers are into. Like, I made 5X in 10 days. Who gives a crap? This is about saving the future of human freedom, i.e. the very existence of human civilization. We cannot exist in a system run by central banks and money printing. That system has run its course, and it has run humanity into the ground. And I did a podcast over the weekend talking about this, that as long as money printing continues through the central banks, then evil will always persist in our societies. It's the money printing that causes the depopulation agendas to succeed. It's the money printing that pushes the wars. It's the money printing that funds the government propaganda, the rise of tyranny and authoritarianism. And when you end money printing, which you can do, by the way, by choosing decentralized finance, choosing a system based on peer-to-peer currency, of which Bitcoin is the king of that, if you choose that system, you can be free. And if enough of us choose that system, then humanity can be free. And we will literally watch the governments of the world that are rooted in evil and central banks and money printing, we will watch them collapse and shrivel up like the witches are melting. They will melt into nothingness as their source of debt dries up, as we reject their debt and say, hell no, and we choose something different, something based on we the people, which is peer-to-peer money, decentralized finance, we the people. Have you ever thought about Bitcoin that way, that it's like we the people money? I mean, I didn't think about it that way, not until just recently, but it is peer-to-peer, decentralized. Now, again, I just want to be clear. Bitcoin has issues. It has limitations. Obviously, you know, it was invented before a lot of new developments, you know, things like the Mimblewimble blockchain, or even the CoinJoin protocols, or Dandelion protocol, or what have you. Bitcoin is not the most advanced tech. It's just the most commonly accepted cryptocurrency. And I think it will always be here. I think Bitcoin will be around for centuries. And the central banks won't. And in fact, a lot of nations that we currently live under and suffer under, such as the United States of America, will also not exist as they currently do for many more years. Now, something interesting happens when you shift your focus to the world of we the people money, which is decentralized finance. And for some of you who maybe aren't interested in this topic, just bear with me here. Because frankly, we all need to be competent in this area. But hear me out. There's something fascinating. Once I began to shift my consciousness to focus on this, I began to realize that all this talk about inflation and government debt and debt ceilings and spending, it's all theater. It's all a distraction to keep you occupied in the government's numbers. Oh, how many new jobs? How many jobs lost? Unemployment figures, you know, inflation numbers. First of all, it's all BS. All the numbers from the government are made up. But secondly, why play in their game? It's a game where at the central bank, Jerome Powell is, you know, twisting the dials like the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain and trying to scare everybody, you know, with the hologram mirage, like, do as I say, and, you know, or else we'll, you know, turn down the cost of money or turn up the cost of money, just like playing with the knobs and dials and acting like they're gods. They're not gods. They're little weasels who are parasites on society. They prey off the productivity of others like you and I, and they have nothing to offer the world other than functioning as blood-sucking parasites, just to be clear. And they pretend like they can control everything by controlling the cost of money, which is interbank lending rates, i.e. interest rates. And they pretend like what they print has actual value, even though it's counterfeit fiat currency. Well, the man behind the curtain, or in some cases, the Janet Yellen behind the curtain. There's another kind of interesting creature that thinks she's in charge. But when they are exposed, what you will find is that what they've carried out is massive theft and confiscation from the working class for generations. You know, since 1913, Creature from Jekyll Island, they have carried out massive theft. And it was a giant scam that humanity did not need to sign up for. But in contrast, in a world where you get to keep the product of your labor, i.e. where you're not a slave, is a world where the, let's say, the representation of the value of your labor or contributions holds value in something that you can keep, something that isn't confiscated, something that isn't subjected to hyperinflationary money printing, right? So only when there is a hard limit on supply, which, by the way, also applies to gold and silver. There's a hard limit because it's hard to mine that stuff out of the ground, right? So there's built-in scarcity based on the laws of physics and mining and the energy costs of mining and so on, and the geography of the planet, things like that, the built-in scarcity in the Earth's crust. But in the digital world, there is built-in scarcity algorithmically in Bitcoin or other coins. You know, Bitcoin, the limit is 21 million coins. And what that means is that whatever coins that you hold and earn will never be subjected to hyperinflationary coin printing or money printing. And I used to be concerned that, oh, what if they change the rules and just like increase the supply to 50 million coins? And now I understand that will never happen because there would never be enough consensus on the network to dilute the coins that everybody currently holds, because the network consensus is determined essentially by the people who already hold the coins. You know, the governance model. And thus, no one will change that rule and just create a bunch of new coins, because it's decentralized, because no one person has the power. Why do governments print money? Because they have the power to do so. And they can't resist it. They can't resist printing money, creating money out of thin air, and using it to expand their power and their tyranny and their personal wealth at the expense of others. Again, they're parasites. They're blood-sucking parasites. But even in the Bitcoin network, even if there were would-be parasites that tried to come in and run a node and like, I'm going to be a blood-sucking parasite, the other nodes would say, no, you're not. We vote your results out of here, because one blood-sucking parasite can't change the rules, nor can 1,000. Well, for reasons that you know if you understand decentralized finance, right? So too much power in the hands of too few people creates evil in the world, especially when it's money printing power. Distributing that power among a large number of individuals creates honest money and ultimately then abundance and freedom. And now I see the crypto community embracing these ideas more strongly, more deeply than ever before. It's like, from my point of view, the cryptocurrency, especially the Bitcoin community, and you might criticize me for saying it this way, but whatever. The way I'm seeing it is that the cryptocurrency community came around to the way I've been thinking for a long time, because I've been fighting this fight for 20 years. People like myself or Alex Jones or Steve Quayle, we've been in this for decades, fighting for human freedom. And finally, the cryptocurrency community has come around to realizing the dangers of the banking institutions, the dangers of censorship, you know? I mean, even 5 years ago, I think most crypto people, you know, let's say even just 4 years ago, were kind of okay with censorship. At least that was my impression. But now, no. Almost all of them are anti-censorship. Even if they lean left politically, they see the dangers of censorship because they're being subjected to deplatforming and surveillance and censorship and all the things that are happening in the speech arena. The same evil governments that are at war with free speech are also at war with crypto. Elizabeth Warren and her anti-crypto assassin squad, or whatever that is, running around trying to kill everybody. I mean, metaphorically speaking, perhaps, trying to kill off every crypto project because she works for the central bank Gestapo, right? She's a fiat Nazi is what she is, and a fake Indian too on top of that. She's a fiat currency Nazi. Well, guess what? She's going to lose. You know why the governments and the central banks are going to lose? Because they can't stop decentralized finance. They can't stop DeFi. They can try, but they literally can't stop it. In fact, the only way they could ever stop it, I was actually having a discussion with a friend about this over the weekend. And the friend was asking me, you know, how far would they have to go to actually stop Bitcoin? And the answer is they'd have to take down the entire internet. And if they did that, you know, my friend was like, well, maybe they're willing to do that. Okay, if they did that, guess what else would fail? Everything, because banking, finance, transactions, transportation, logistics, you know, food deliveries, fuel deliveries, you know, emergency response services, like everything, government, everything you can think of is now dependent on the internet as critical infrastructure. So if you take down the internet to try to stop Bitcoin, you would take down all of society at the same time. Now, are they willing to do that? Will they go that far? I don't know, but that's why you have gold. That's why you have gold and silver. The ultimate cold storage offline money. When things get really freaking bad, if decentralized finance fails, you're already in a world of hurt. It's Mad Max, but it's good to have gold and silver. And gold and silver are also universal. But of course, you can't teleport them across the internet. So will the governments of the world intentionally take down the entire internet? I don't think so, because it would take themselves out of power. Now, will they have regional power grid failures? Will they carry out false flag, grid down emergencies in order to declare martial law and try to confiscate guns and try to have roadblocks and everything? Yeah, of course they'll do that. Oh, I expect that to happen. That's going to happen probably in the next year here in the United States. They're going to shut down regional power grids and probably blame right-wingers. You already see the headlines about that. They're going to blame conservatives when it's probably a total FBI operation, you know, Operation Dark Ops or something, right? They just want to plunge the nation into darkness and blame their political opponents. I mean, obviously, that's what J6 was. you know, so they haven't released a video of the pipe bombing guy and his car and all that stuff. Yeah, it's all FBI. They ran the whole thing. So yes, they're going to screw with the power grid from time to time, but they're not going to have a total collapse of the internet. And as long as TCPIP works, they can't stop decentralized finance. They can't stop it. They can maybe segment it. They can harass it in certain ways. They can make it more difficult for traffic to move around. But frankly, the whole TCPIP protocol was designed to survive a nuclear attack. I mean, the very first internet was designed so that traffic could be routed through multiple pathways to get to its destination. And hence, even if they take out a bunch of nodes, well, you know, the traffic's still going to find a way. It'll just go through a different pathway. It's a highly redundant system of nodes, you know, TCPIP. Look it up. So let me just reiterate something here and I'll move on to other topics, but I am in the process of moving everything in my world, e-commerce, platforms, hosting, personal finance, everything I can possibly do, payroll, you name it. I'm in the process of moving everything out of the fiat currency system and into decentralized finance with some vaulted gold and silver as my personal, you know, savings account. Retirement fund, right? That's, I don't trust the government. I don't trust Social Security. I don't trust, you know, none of that's ever going to exist as far as I'm concerned. So I trust in gold and silver and crypto. And so I'm moving everything in that direction. It's going to take a while. We're going to build a lot of new components on our platforms. We're going to roll out new features for you. We have a lot of surprises coming for you too, by the way. I've already directed my dev teams into some really fascinating directions that I think will amaze you when it's finally ready to roll out. We're moving our code into decentralized components. We are engaging in the tokenomics of decentralized third-party processing where necessary to achieve certain computational goals for various platforms. I'm speaking vaguely because I don't want to say yet exactly what it is, but when we fully integrate it, we'll announce it and you'll be amazed. We are decentralizing in every way we possibly can, including in code and hosting and quote money, you name it. And I'm doing this. I don't care if anybody else does it. I'm doing this because I see this is critical. We each have to make a choice and I'm making that choice right now. I'm joining the decentralized finance future for humanity because that's the future of freedom, truth, abundance, and it's a future without the evils of fake fiat, digital currency, central bank, you know, counterfeiting operations and rogue evil governments censoring us and trying to control everything that we do. Elizabeth Warren, you're going to lose. You money printers, you money changers, you're going to lose. They've already lost. They just don't know it yet. All right. So be part of the future of the human race and join me in this transition. I will keep you posted on all the things that I'm implementing and things that I'm finding. Just right now, if I were to give you a homework assignment, would be to just gain competency in all of this, which I've said like a year ago. Make sure you know how to have a crypto wallet. Make sure you know how to send and receive, you know, just even some tiny amount of Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever, or, you know, a privacy coin, Monero, whatever. Make sure you know how to do this. Make sure that you have the skill set, because it's going to be critical for your survival moving forward. And there's some news coming up, a lot of good news. I expect that I'll be able to share with you about some very cool advancements and adoptions of certain protocols and things like that. There's a lot of innovation in this space. I think some of the smartest people in the world are working in this space right now. And it's not just about decentralized money. It's about decentralized speech and publishing and file storage and, you know, everything you can imagine. The decentralized world is a world of human freedom. Now, one of the problems we have in this world of centralized stuff is we have centralization of people. And what do I mean by that? I mean, we have too many of the oblivious masses are worshiping an individual, and they want to put their hopes in that individual, they want to focus on those people. We live in a world of cult fanatics, frankly, which I never really understood. You know, people worship celebrities just because their faces are in movies. Who cares? You know, I was talking about it the other day. What a curse to be a famous actor and to have to live your life speaking other people's words, you know, the words in the script, instead of living your life speaking with your authentic voice, which is what I do. I would much rather be me than a famous Hollywood actor. I get to say what I believe every day, in fact, without censorship, because I built the platform for, you know, Brighteon. But it would be a curse. I'd go crazy being a famous actor, having to read the script and perform that script. No, I would break out of the movie, and I would just have like a live stream podcast. Like, let me tell you what I really think, you know? I couldn't stand being a famous actor. But for whatever reason, a lot of people in our society worship other people, and they worship political figures too. And we've seen on the right a lot of Trump worship, like irrational Trump worship. Like, Trump can do no wrong. And any criticism of Trump, you know, gets deflected. Like, you can't say that. We also see this on the left, of course. You know, this isn't unique to Republicans. On the left, almost seems to be even more cult-like worship of, like, Joe Biden somehow. Like, who would worship that guy? He can barely walk across the stage without doing a face plant, you know? it's crazy. But we saw a lot of celebrity worship of Barack Obama, who, by the way, was a master of neuro-linguistic programming. He was a hypnotist. He was a sorcerer. He was a master at it. You could read his speeches, and you could see they're written by NLP practitioners. It's pretty shocking stuff. But he hypnotized a lot of people. A lot of people worshipped him irrationally. They bowed down to him. And even right now, I am sick and tired of hearing news about, oh, this famous person has endorsed this person. Like, over the weekend, I heard Jack Dorsey, you know, the former Twitter guy, the CEO of Twitter. I think he was one of the founders, who was one of the worst censorship goons out there. Jack Dorsey is not a good person, in my opinion, but he endorses Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And by the way, I've interviewed RFK Jr. and I admire a lot of things about RFK Jr., but I'm not a cultist. I don't worship any person, no man or woman. I only worship Jesus Christ. I don't worship any humans, by the way. It doesn't matter if they're a Kennedy or not, but I admire RFK for his courage, for his stance, for his knowledge, and so on, right? So there are rational reasons. When I admire someone, there's a reason for it. It's not a cult of personality thing. Well, the media is talking about, oh, Jack Dorsey endorses RFK. And I'm thinking, who gives a crap? That's actually a negative. I mean, Jack Dorsey, in my view, one of the most evil pro-censorship tyrants in the history of big tech, endorses RFK, who was one of the most censored people. Censored by freaking Twitter, by the way. along with myself, still censored by Elon freaking Musk, right? And I'm so sick and tired of hearing about Elon Musk or Jack Dorsey. I don't care. None of us should care what these people think, because centralization of influence or power in the hands of a very limited number of people, that is unhealthy for society. Just like we need decentralized finance in order to experience freedom, we need decentralization of influence. I would rather live in a world of 10 million influencers to follow online, to choose from, to hear different views, rather than, you know, just five famous people. Oh, it's the Joe Rogan experience again, right? I mean, nothing against Joe Rogan, but he's not the only guy out there that, you know, has interesting shows. And when we just hear the same names over and over again, oh, it's Jack Dorsey, oh, it's Elon Musk, oh, it's Joe Rogan, oh, it's Donald Trump, oh, enough already. It seems to me that this whole process of choosing one representative for our government should be obsolete by now. We need to live in a world where we have decentralization of government as well, which, by the way, the 10th Amendment is somewhat all about that, you know, states' rights, and the very structure of the United States of America is about some level of decentralization, thank goodness. That's why we have states. And that's why I'm happy to be a Texan, because Texas is a state that, you know, for example, just outlawed child mutilation surgeries by hospitals, you know, gender bender stuff. And I think Texas outlawed all the drag queen story time to the kids too, I think. But, you know, I'm all in favor of protecting children from the pedos and the perverts. So I'm happy to live in Texas. I'm pro Second Amendment, you know, all of this. And by the way, Ken Paxton is the best attorney general Texas has had in my lifetime. And let's help him survive, you know, the Senate trial, because they're trying to remove him from office permanently. They impeached him, you know, last week, or yeah, was it 2 weeks ago? They impeached him. And it's just a bunch of Democrats and rhinos trying to get him out of office because Ken Paxton is fighting against Big Pharma and he's fighting the trans cult community thing. So anyway, don't we need more decentralization of government? I mean, seriously, think about every federal agency. It's just the concentration of power into the hands of the few, the corrupt few. You know, the FBI, which only selectively prosecutes certain individuals politically while selectively protecting Hunter Biden and the Biden crime family, right? DOJ, same thing. ATF just recently came out and said, even if your state legalized pot consumption, even for medical reasons, by the way, you cannot own a firearm or purchase ammo, because that would be a violation of federal laws, because cannabis is still a Schedule I substance under federal law. So the ATF just said, even if you live in Oregon, and even if you have a, you know, prescription or permission or a doctor's note or whatever it takes to have cannabis, maybe you have glaucoma or whatever, chronic pain, the ATF can come arrest you and seize your guns, and they can charge you with a crime for lying on your form. What, I forgot the name of the form, 44 something, when you purchase a firearm. Because there's a checkbox on there. I'm pretty sure I remember seeing that checkbox that says, like, I'm not a substance abuser, right? Or, you know, I'm not using illicit, whatever. So if you're using cannabis, the ATF can come say that you lied on your form, and they can convict you of some kind of serious crime. So that's the tyranny of the federal government trying to overrule states' rights and state-oriented freedom. This is why, frankly, the more local everything becomes, the more decentralized everything becomes, the more freedom we have. And this is why, ultimately, you know, a breaking up of the centralized Washington, D.C. federal authoritarian system, it's not a bad thing. It's a reform. We need to reform the structure of governance of society following a model of the way, frankly, that the crypto, the decentralized finance communities have reformed governance in their ecosystems. They've done a better job than our current election system, which is completely rigged, of course. You know, just a bunch of cheaters and liars and fraudsters, and they throw a puppet in the White House called Joe Biden, and then they claim you have to accept that, otherwise you're an insurrectionist, you know? So we are living under a form of government which has become a tyranny because it's obsolete. It doesn't represent the will of the people. Right? When was the last time you thought that your, quote, representative in Washington, D.C., you know, your senator, did you ever think they represented your interests? No, of course not. They represent the interests of their big corporate donors, the drug companies, the weapons manufacturers, right? You know, whoever's given them the most money typically is who they represent. They don't represent you. If you want to be represented, we're going to have some pretty major reforms. We're going to have a whole different system of government. And that day is coming, probably because this current system is on the way to collapse. And when it collapses, we have to be smart enough as human beings to not just recreate the same old, stupid, broken, obsolete system that got us to this point in the first place. You know, I pray to God that after this government collapses and this fiat currency collapses, that we don't just have a bunch of Americans say, oh, let's just do it again. Seriously? No. How about we try something that doesn't end in destitution and totalitarianism and economic collapse and massive human suffering and internal war and strife? And how about we try a different system? Like real decentralization of power. Get everything back to we the people. How about that? Well, there are ways to do that. There are governance models that can be applied that are far more democratic, let's say, far more equitable, that are far more rational, logical. And a lot of agencies could not exist or should not exist under this future system, like the FDA. How is it that one agency, the FDA, which is paid off by the drug companies, I mean, drug companies actually pay the FDA millions or tens of millions of dollars each year, and the FDA can determine to outlaw anything that competes with the drug companies? Well, that's crazy. That's a centralization and corruption of power. Why should the FDA even exist at all? Frankly, why should the ATF even exist at all? Why should the DEA even exist at all? All of these agencies attempt to address problems that can be solved locally in a more decentralized fashion, in a way that is adaptive and sensitive to the needs of local communities. Now, getting back to Jack Dorsey and RFK, by the way, I took a little bit of heat from Friday's show where I was pretty strongly criticizing Donald J. Trump for not coming out and, you know, apologizing for his role in pushing Operation Warp Speed and the vaccines. And, you know, Trump just bragged about how he made vaccines available faster than anyone because people wanted them, he said, you know, still oblivious to the fact that vaccines are killing people. So I took some heat for those comments. And people were asking me, why are you being so harsh on Trump? What are you, anti-Trump? See, that's that cult of personality thing coming in again. I'm not pro-Trump or anti-Trump. I'm not invested in one man. I'm not a celebrity worshiper. I'm talking about principles. I'm talking about people's principles, their honesty, their morality. You know, them telling the truth and standing by the truth, having integrity. And frankly, I need to say this, the reason I'm so hard on Trump is because I'm trying to give him a chance to maybe win the election. Because, and listen to this carefully, because if Trump doesn't correct himself on this vaccine issue, there's a very good chance he gets steamrolled by RFK Jr. That's right. Trump's going to get steamrolled by RFK. Why do I say that? Because, well, look, it's conservatives that are the most skeptical of vaccines. It's conservatives that know more than Democrats, because the conservative media has covered this more. Conservatives know that vaccines are killing people and injuring people. And it's the conservatives who are opposed to vaccine mandates, which, by the way, technically Trump is as well. He doesn't want to force anybody to take these vaccines. He's been clear about that. And you know, I applaud him for that position. But RFK Jr. comes out and is directly, he's going at the throat of the vaccine makers. And he's directly talking about these vaccines as being, you know, biological weapons against humanity, which is what they are. And RFK is exposing Fauci while Trump kept Fauci on the payroll, didn't he? He could have fired him, but he didn't. RFK is going to rip the NIH to shreds and stop the government funding of bioweapons. Trump gave more money to the DOD, record amounts of money. At one point, it was $750 billion just to the DOD, which built the bioweapon, by the way. Trump cannot defeat, this is my opinion, I don't think Trump can defeat RFK Jr. without Trump addressing the vaccine question and really kind of clearing it up in some way. That's my position. Now, will RFK get the nomination on the Democrat side? That's a big question mark because, you know, the mainstream Democrats are going to try to weasel their way into power and try to have no debates and try to cut off funding for RFK and all that. They're going to try to squeeze him out. They may not be successful in that, however. And to the credit of Jack Dorsey, he has come out and endorsed RFK instead of an establishment Democrat candidate. So I do want to give him kudos for that. But do you realize we're only a couple more Biden stumbles away from President Kamala Harris? Seriously, have you thought about that? You know, one more fall, one more face plant onto the wrong piece of concrete or something, and it's over for Biden. He's out. And then you're going to have President Kamala. And then the Democrats are going to panic. And they might realize that RFK is their best shot. Maybe. Or RFK might just power through and beat Kamala for the nomination because Kamala is not a likable person. I mean, she doesn't stumble around like Joe, but she's pretty easy to not like, that's for sure. So it's not difficult to imagine RFK gets the Democrat nomination, which I think would be a very healthy thing for America under our current system. You know, even though it is all centralized, at least RFK is not a dino, you know, like an establishment Democrat, you know, like rhinos. He's not a dino. So that would put RFK probably versus Donald J. Trump. And in that matchup, I think Trump loses unless he changes his position on vaccines. I think RFK gets all the Democrat vote and then some portion of the Republican vote. And then we have President Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And I'm not sure who his running mate would be. But, you know, I fear it would be some more of a mainstream Democrat in the same way that Trump had Mike Pence as his running mate. And Pence is a rhino. Pence is a traitor, in my opinion. And I can imagine that RFK would probably try to pick a VP that would make him more acceptable to the D's. And then, although I even hate to bring this up, we'd all be at risk of the deep state trying to eliminate RFK to make that the VP president, to put another, you know, establishment Democrat in charge of everything. They would just get Joe Biden, you know, chapter three or whatever, or chapter two. I guess it would be Barack Obama chapter four at that point. So there's a lot of ways that this can go very wrong for all of us. And that's why I'm so harsh on Trump, not because I'm trying to attack him, but because I'm trying to make him realize that if he doesn't address this vaccine issue, he's not going to be president. I don't think so. And the thing about Trump, and yeah, I'll probably take some heat for saying this too. The thing about Trump that I've learned is that he seems to be surrounded by so many gatekeepers that isolate him from alternative media. He never seems to be aware of what's going on in alt media. And is just paying attention to mainstream media. Now, maybe I'm wrong about that. We are going to have someone from Trump's team on in the studio for an interview, by the way. So we do have someone coming on that's going to help maybe help us navigate that. And maybe they'll correct me. Maybe I'm wrong about this. And I'm open to that. Fine. But my impression is that Trump, they've got him in a castle. I don't mean a physical castle. I mean like an information you know, like a vault. Like they don't let anything come in to his consciousness unless they control it. There's too many gatekeepers around Trump, is my general impression. And they're telling him, you know, don't say anything against the drug companies. Like, you don't want to lose the drug companies. Well, the drug companies is who's killing us, is what is becoming apparent. And if you cozy up to the drug companies, then I don't think you're going to win this next election. That's my assessment, but we'll see. Now, let me shift gears here because there was some funny news over the weekend from Breitbart. Climate cultists are now running around deflating people's tires. If you drive an SUV, they just deflate your tires. And the climate cultists, they think this is somehow a really effective form of protest, deflating your tires. Well, number one, by the way, underinflated tires get worse gas mileage. So if they only partially deflate your tires, then you'll actually burn more gas to drive that vehicle. So good job, climate cultists. You're burning more gas with more emissions, which is the opposite of what you claim to stand for. But secondly, remember me saying on this podcast that you should always carry a bicycle pump in your car. A foot pump, by the way. And I should mention the brand that I found to be the most reliable is just Schwinn. Yeah, because some of these cheap Chinese brands, they don't work. But the Schwinn brand seems to work. So get yourself a Schwinn foot pump. It's a bicycle tire pump. You pump it with your foot. And make sure you have that in your car. Why? Because you can pump up your car tire with it. And I remember the first time I said this, I got a reaction from some people like, that's not possible. The car is too heavy. And I'm just thinking, my God, are people that dumb? So, you know, what's the PSI of your car tires? I mean, you should know, it's for most cars, like common everyday cars, it's like 35 PSI, right? 35 PSI. That's pounds per square inch, right? That's the pressure. So what's the pressure of a bicycle tire? Let's say like one of those 20 speed, you know, the traditional, I don't know, the most uncomfortable bike where you're leaning forward. What's the tire pressure on those tires? Oh, it's like 60 PSI, I mean, give or take, depending on the tire, right? So the PSI that goes into your car tires is about half of many bicycle tires. Well, if you can pump a tire to 60 PSI, surely you can pump a tire to 35 PSI. And you can. It's just a bigger tire, so it takes a few more pumps, but it's not difficult. It just takes a little longer. Doesn't even take very long. So for these climate cultists that are letting the air out of people's tires, all you got to do, oh, they let the air out, just pull out the bicycle pump, pop it in, just start pumping away for like 2 minutes, you're done, you're back in business. Is that a catastrophe for some people? Tires flat, I don't know what to do. You're going to call like some tow service or what's that, AAA roadside emergency? Oh, there's no air in my tires. You realize when the tow truck guy shows up, he's like, oh, there's just no air in your tires. You know, he's going to look at you with a sense of condemnation. Like, you should have had a Schwinn bicycle pump in your car and you could be back on the road. You don't have to wait for me to show up. Just pump it up yourself and go. See? So always travel with a bicycle tire in your car because you never know when these climate cultists are going to let the air out. Now, if you don't want to do the work of pumping it up, the Milwaukee company, that's the Milwaukee Tool Company with the red logos and everything, they have a really nice auto inflator that's battery powered. It's part of their power tools line. I have one of these too. I use it to pump up tractor tires, which are even lower pressure, by the way. A typical tractor tire might only be 20 PSI. I mean, it's huge, but the pressure is almost nothing. They're kind of soft and squishy, which is how they're supposed to be, by the way. That's your suspension system on a tractor is squishy tires. I don't know if you knew that, but it's true. So I just take one of these Milwaukee pumps and you know, put a 5 amp hour battery in it or whatever, and set it down, set it on 20 PSI, pop it onto the tractor tire, hit go, walk away. You know, 15 minutes later, it's all pumped up to 20 PSI. You can carry those around in your car too if you want. It's just more trouble. It's just bigger than a bicycle pump. But make sure you have a way to pump up your tires. And me being a prepper, I also travel with a tire patch kit. You may think that's overkill, but it isn't. You can have a nail or a screw in your tire. One time I pulled out a sharp rock had gotten into a tire. I pulled it out. I was like, this is just a sharp rock. Just kind of shaped like a sliver, you know, just a piece of stone. Pulled that out. You kind of ream out the hole with this tool that comes with in the tire patch kits, you know, and then you put in a plug. This is like a gooey, sticky plug. You pop the plug in there, pull that out, cut it off with your pliers. I assume you're traveling with all this stuff, because if you're a prepper, you are. And then you pull out your Schwinn bicycle tire pump and you pump it up. Boom, you're good to go. You don't need to call AAA. You don't need to make an emergency out of it. You can be back on the road in less than 10 minutes. So, you know, basic skills, folks, right? Just basic stuff. Now, don't get me wrong. The climate cultists can be a grave danger to your life and liberty and property. There's a story that we're going to be covering at Natural News, but I saw it over the weekend at PJ Media. A South Dakota farmer named Jared Bosley is fighting to keep his farm. It's been in his family for four generations. He's fighting to keep his farm out of the hands of greedy green prairie fairies. Okay, what does that mean? He's one of roughly 80 farmers with lawsuits against the same green energy company looking to steal their land. So there's a company called Summit. And Summit is, they want to build these pipelines to suck CO2 out of the atmosphere. And then these pipelines are going to run the CO2 to North Dakota and store it underground. And we've talked about these pipelines before. So they want to build these giant CO2 sucking machines to alter atmospheric chemistry, basically to take the life out of the atmosphere, because CO2 is the life molecule for plants and crops and rainforests, you know, grass, the whole deal. They want to build this pipeline to be 1,958 miles long, and 474 miles of that is going to go through South Dakota. So they need to steal people's land in order to build this pipeline. So from the story, this company called Summit Carbon Solutions is trying to acquire Bosley's farm in the name of eminent domain, right? Eminent domain. So they go to the governor, Terry Branstad. Let's see. Hold on. It says here that Summit was also a sponsor of Governor Kristi Noem's inauguration. That's South Dakota. But Summit reportedly goes to governor's, and they get the governors to declare eminent domain to take private farmland. Right. As Greg Price tweeted this out, what I'm about to tell you should be the most important story in America, but no national media is talking about it. It's one of the biggest invasions of property rights in American history is currently happening in South Dakota to expand green energy. And it goes on and talks about this land grab. Now, again, it's not that this land is being taken to build some kind of infrastructure that you could reasonably argue is aiding people in the area. It's not like it's a highway or railroad tracks or, I don't know, power line or whatever. And even that's debatable. You know, eminent domain is just straight up government theft. But this is even worse. It's eminent domain is stealing farmers' land to build a pipeline that will alter the atmosphere. This is terraforming, by the way. Alter the atmosphere in a way that causes global starvation. So this is stealing people's land, which, by the way, destroys that farm's food production, in order to actually cause suffering on a global scale. Now, I know they say, oh, they're protecting the planet by taking CO2 out of the atmosphere. No, they're not. they're causing depopulation. They are destroying the planet by taking away the single most important molecule that supports plant life, animal life, and human life on this planet, and that's CO2. So are we going to let these corporations steal farmland so they can build atmospheric sucking pipelines and machines to destroy the planet and cause mass global starvation? There's a website you can go to, SD, which stands for South Dakota, sdfreedomcaucus.com. And at that website, you can join up, join their email list, meet the team, whatever, see the news, check out the issues. And they are fighting against this land grab. And this is crazy. If they can come for your land there in the name of climate change, there's nothing they can't steal from you in the name of climate change. They can claim that you just living in the country is a threat to the planet, or that you having a tractor is a threat to the planet. Did you see the news over the weekend? I don't have the headline in front of me, but in Europe, they're trying to slaughter 200,000 cows in the name of climate change. They just don't want you to eat meat. They don't want any animals on ranches anywhere in Europe, is what it looks like. And this is part of the global mass starvation, which in the United States is all about sucking CO2 out of the atmosphere so that plants don't produce as much food. I mean, this is an extermination agenda. It's global terraforming. I gave a speech about this in 2019 called Oblivion Agenda. And I laid out the whole thing, including the use of bioweapons. I basically called it all out. You can find that speech, by the way, if you want to fact check me on this. That speech is on Brightown.com. Just search for Oblivion Agenda and you'll see it. It's a speech I gave at the Steve Quayle event in Branson, Missouri. That was the last time I was in Branson. Good barbecue. Now, if they can take away your land while claiming to be saving the planet, what else could they take away from you for any reason they want? What else? Well, check out this headline. This is going to blow your mind. This one's from Revolver.News. South Africa plans to limit water for white people by enacting race quotas. Okay, yep. This is from the article. It seems the South African government is not satisfied with merely seizing land from white farmers because, I mean, let's face it, South Africa has become a racist, you know, reverse apartheid regime that's engaged in ethnic cleansing against white people. They have now weaponized water, using it as a tool of hatred and division by introducing race quotas on something that's a cornerstone of life. So this is being proposed right now in South Africa. And it says that the consideration, this is in the proposed law, that the consideration of a decision for water use license applications, right? You have to have a license from the government to get water. It must promote equity and redressing past racial and gender discrimination. So wait a second. Are you saying that because the apartheid regime was racist, therefore the current regime has to be just as racist, but in the other direction? So it's not about liberty and coexistence and inclusivity and tolerance. No, it's about race wars and racial division. And if you're white, no water for you. As Darren Beatty writes at Revolver.News, quote, apparently dehydrating white people and destroying their farms will serve as retribution for the past apartheid government. This is radical liberal logic at its very ugliest and most dangerous. And it's the exact same logic the American regime is using inside our own borders. So if you think they're not going to try to starve you, kill you, exterminate you, drain your bank accounts, confiscate your money, take everything from you, your land, your farm, your house, your dignity, your privacy, if you think they're not going to take all that stuff, you're living in a delusional fairy tale world. Of course they're coming for all that. Hence the reason why we need private digital money, right? Hence the reason we need decentralization of society. So that every human being, every person of every color, of every race, of every preference, you know, religion, ethnicity, whatever, can be treated with dignity. Otherwise, we're just going to go through the timeline of human history here where government regimes just carry out hate crimes and violence and genocide against one race for this generation, and then another race for another generation, and then another race. I mean, governments are just going to target different people at different times, right? I mean, even in the United States, black people were targeted by the FBI in the 1950s and 1960s and 70s. So who's being targeted today? Christians and white people. Well, who might be targeted a generation later? Might be gay people. Might be lesbians and trans people, right? That's why I always have to caution the LGBT community. Be careful what power over others that you wish for. Be careful of the power you give government or banks or institutions to deplatform people because they don't go along with your trans agenda. One day, that whole system of oppression and centralization of power is going to be turned against you. And you will find yourself unsafe, probably, in a society that just is bigoted against you for that generation. See, as long as we have governments in charge, there will always be genocide. There will always be targeting of one group or another. It's just when you are alive in history. You know, it's like right now, if you're white, you're targeted. And right now, if you're a woman, you're targeted, by the way. In the 1980s and 90s, it was all pro-women, everything. It was feminism, right? Today, you even ask, what is a woman? Oh, you're banned. How dare you be so insensitive to ask what is a woman? Or if you talk about motherhood or being the mother, oh, no, you know, the medical schools are being taught to refer to the mother as the birthing parent. Because, you know, might be a man, who knows? It's medical school. Could be a man, pregnant man. I want to see that. I want to see the pregnant man birthing center. I wonder how long they'll stay in business. But then again, you know, the lunatic ideas of the left persist for a while, but then there's pushback. And believe me, all of you listening on the left, one day there could be like a hard Christian right that comes to power and wants to, you know, reverse all the years of the rainbow flags taking over everything, including police cars for some reason. And there could be a crackdown on transgenderism and gay people that could be pretty darn aggressive. I mean, could be people arrested for being gay. I mean, that's how far the backlash could go, just based on the insanity of the current push for pedophilia and grooming of children and child mutilations. You know, the transgender movement in America is pissing off a lot of people, as evidenced by the backlash against Bud Light and Target stores. And by the way, even the left are astonished at how effective these boycotts have been against Anheuser-Busch and Target and some other companies. Well, you know, the Bud Light company has lost, what, 30%+ of their sales now? Months into the boycott. Target, how much of their market valuation have they lost? I don't know, $13 billion or something in that range. And of course, the left is going crazy. They're saying, oh, this is all because of the hatred of conservatives. No, it isn't. It's because of the hatred of Target against children and how Budweiser hates America and American values and how Budweiser hates their own customers. But Target hates children. Target partnered with a Satanist and they want to sell clothing that celebrates the mutilations of children. That's serious hatred. That's what Target is doing. The backlash has only just begun, folks. And you may wonder, what the heck is Budweiser even doing with pushing transgenderism? Why are all these corporations suddenly pushing transgenderism? Why do they want to sign up for the culture wars like this. Because they're oblivious. You know, they have to qualify for the ESG scores, you know, to get their funding. But they're oblivious to their own customers. Why? Too much centralization of power. This gets back to my main theme of the day. Why is Budweiser such a dominant beer company? Because they've monopolized, or not quite, but semi-monopolized that beverage space. Well, not for long, by the way. But Target, same thing. There's just Target and Walmart in that space. There really aren't any other similar competitors in that space. Not at that scale. You know, it used to be Kmart, but are they even around anymore? I don't know. But the backlash against Target is a very real thing. And it's something that Target deserves. And I think that we're watching just the leading edge of a wave of backlash events that are going to hit these corporations hard economically for years to come. I think the LGBT cultists have overplayed their hand, especially the trans cultists. They've overplayed their hand. They've been pushing rainbow lunacy, and this is supposed to be Pride Month. They push Pride on everything, soccer teams and, you know, embassy buildings. Everything's got to have rainbows all over it, as if they're claiming Satan's domain over the planet. The backlash has begun, and the backlash is going to gain steam for years to come. And, oh, by the way, wait until the children that they're mutilating today grow up and realize, oh my God, my insane left-wing parents mutilated my genitals. Wait until those people come on my show and start talking about how evil the trans cult community was to them. How about that? Because that's coming. They're going to be all over the media talking about, you know, showing their scars, showing their mutilations, you know, talking about, oh, I was 12 and my parents wanted to show me off at the parties, and so they cut off my balls, you know, and then they gave me a front hole. You're going to have these people all over the internet telling the truth about this, especially since censorship won't work much longer because of decentralization of content and videos and speech. So yeah, the truth is coming, the backlash is coming, and a whole generation of mutilated children by the trans quote community, this is going to be like this generation's thalidomide disaster. And if you don't know what thalidomide is, that was the morning sickness drug that was given to women in the 1970s, I believe, caused children to be born without limbs. Children with no arms, for example. It was a drug. Well, today, children are mutilated by the trans pushers. And that backlash is going to be, you know, rather motivated. And it's going to grow in size for years to come. So any corporation that brands themselves with the pride flag is, in fact, extricating themselves from a large part of the economy, because they will never be forgiven by an increasing number of people who now associate the pride flag with child genitalia mutilations and Satanism, which actually is what the pride flag stands for. It's Satanism. It's straight up Satanism. That's why Target partnered with a Satanist, by the way, because they're targeting your kids for Satan's dominion. Seriously, I mean, this is a full-blown spiritual war. All right. So it's going to be an interesting week. There's going to be a lot of breaking news, news about Russia, a lot of things I didn't even get into here. An even more aggressive invasion of the United States is underway from the migrants coming through Central America, by the way. So we'll have news for you on that front. But be ready. A lot of things are about to break. Probably more financial insanity coming here soon, you know, from the broken fiat currency banking system. This is going to be one of the most bizarre years that we've ever lived through. I want to give credit to our preparedness-oriented sponsors. So if you need backup communications, which we all do, the Satellite Phone Store can help you out there, SAT123.com. They make satellite phones affordable, and they have two-way satellite text messaging devices called Bivy Sticks that can help you stay informed even when the cell towers go down. And if you're looking for high-end storable food, nutrition, similar products, check out our store, healthrangerstore.com. We have some outstanding immune-boosting formulas, all lab-tested. You know our philosophy, clean food, clean supplements. We're meticulous about it. We do mass spec testing all the time. And then don't forget that Wednesday, we're going to release the cesium filtration results of the water filters. So be sure to check out my show on Wednesday. I'll have another show for you tomorrow as well. But all that's coming up this week should be interesting. Thank you for listening today. God bless you. I pray for your safety. Thank you for praying for mine. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Take care.